Is it good to finish off a busy day with recording a podcast?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. This is our relaxed time.
Woo!
Been working very hard in the garden, which only still has one rose bush in it. There is no Sir Tristram's. I want a Sir Tristram.
Very, very subtle.
Bunnings, here I come. With my gift cards, thank you.
Fair enough. So you did gardening, I did handyman stuff, which I do every now and then. Occasionally.
Not only is he a geek, nerd, whatever, he's also a handyman. Maybe I should hire you out.
What? To get jobs done kind of okay.
Yeah, within a 12-month time frame. I'm sorry I nagged you months ago to get the door done, finally.
You don't need to keep nagging me. I will get it done within 30 to 40 months.
That's right.
Yes.
Yay. Okay, this is not a gardening show. No.
Or a handyman show. No. So shall we get on with the actual show?
We should.
Yay.
On with the show.
Woo.
Show. Showing out.
Okay. It's so hard to get the bit that I need the little pause that I can easily identify so I can put the theme in.
Are you telling me I talk too much?
You come up with wonderful additions which are hard to cut out.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, we're stopping now. I'm shutting up now.
We shouldn't have made eye contact then. What the? Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, well, what the history, or you great What the Historians out there. I like that
Go
term.
Trev.
I like that
Go
term.
Trev.
Woo.
What the Historians, I think it's cute. Yeah. It's like everyone's joining us on the ride.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
And you're history. All,
everyone's welcome, of course.
And you don't need a TARDIS or a telephone box like on Bill and Ted's.
Yeah.
You've got us. Lucky people.
Yes, and us are, I am Trevor Holland.
And I'm Susie Holland. And giggling a lot.
Yes, yes. So, we should probably move on.
Okay.
Susie, what do you have for us this time?
Okay, now what I've got for you guys this week is you've heard me talk previously in What the History episodes, and thank you very much, loyal listeners, about the worst actor in the world, which was Robert Coates. And the worst golfer in the world of Morris Flitcroft. Poor little guy. So how about I go with the greatest liar on earth? No, it's not any of my ex-partners, though they could fit that description, but a guy that goes by the name of Henry Louis Green. Or was it Henry Louis Green? Or was it Louis Redman? Or even Louis de Rougemont? Now, his name's probably pronounced Louis, but I really can't be bothered doing that right now. Sorry, guys. But these are just four of his aliases, and the latter being the most popular with him. But let's go back to where it all began for the man who called himself an adventurer, but others called him the greatest liar on earth, and he ended up calling himself that as well to capitalize. But I'm jumping ahead here. Now, he was born Henry Louis Grin on the 12th of November 1847 in Grecy in Switzerland. He was the son of a merchant, and he left home at 16 and became a footman for the touring British actress Fanny Kemble, who wasn't only an actress but an abolitionist of slavery in the USA in the 1830s. So yay, go Fanny! And as Henry worked as part of Fanny's entourage, he learned to speak English fluently. And he eventually arrived in London in 1870, where he became a valet from 1870 to 1874, and then moved to Australia in 1875 as the butler of the new Western Australian governor, Sir William Robinson. This appointment only lasted 5 months, as Lady Robinson found Henry to be, and I quote, insolent and ambitious. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he was definitely ambitious. In 1877, the pearl cutter ship Ada, which Henry owned and was master of, was posted as missing and found wrecked off the coast of Cooktown in Queensland some months later. Henry advised that he had saved from Fremantle in Western Australia and was the only survivor of an attack from Indigenous Australians on La Crosse Island, which is a tiny island off northwestern Australia, but he made his way to Sydney in 1880 and landed work in a variety of jobs, such as photographer, dishwasher, seller of shares in mines, waiter and real estate agent, so he was pretty varied. In 1882, Henry changed his name to Henry Lewis Grine, married Eliza Ravenscroft, and had 7 children. And the spelling of his name changed several times from Grine, which was spelt G-R-I-E-N, to Green, G-R-E-E-N. However, in 1897, Henry deserted Eliza and the children, what a lovely guy, and took off for New Zealand working as a spiritualist. Okay, that's a bit of a jump from one to the other. And then he made his way back to England, arriving in 1898 and changing his name to Louis de Rougemont. He visited a Sir John Henniker Heaton, journalist, politician and postal reformer.
Yeah.
Bless his little heart, who gave Louis a letter of introduction to the editor of the Wide World magazine, which became the platform for many of Louis's many stories and tall tales. And the stories were extremely fanciful and began with Louis getting the okay for writing a series in the Wide World magazine from August 1898 to May 1889. The stories told of Louis being marooned in the Australian outback for 30 years with tribes of cannibalistic Indigenous Australians, marrying the daughter of Ludwig Leichhardt, riding on giant sea turtles, telling of golden nuggets that were too big for anyone to carry, bridges made over streams of live locusts, sending off pelicans carrying messages in various languages, so he was trying to train pelicans to be messenger birds.
Allegedly.
And many wombats rising in the clouds at sunset, so he was trying to say that there were lots and lots of wombats rising up over mountains and clouds and things like this, and yeah. Yeah, so people are starting to think, hang on a sec. The more Louis wrote, the more fame he received from people who believed in the stories, and he was asked to give talks on his adventures. Now, the articles were republished in 1899 as, wait for this one, The Adventures of Louis de Rougemont as Told by Himself. I love that. And Louis talked to anyone who would listen about what he did in the wilds of Australia. He told packed crowds who had paid to see him talk about meeting an expedition in 1874 of white men who Louis said were the Giles expedition, and they opened fire on him as they couldn't recognize him as a white man due to the amount of body paint that he was wearing. The only survivor of this particular expedition, William Tietkens, denied this story, saying he would never fire on an unarmed man. Louis was asked, but refused to speak in any of the Indigenous Australian languages he had supposedly learnt, or show on a map any of the places he lives. So alarm bells were starting to go bang, bang, bang. Influential journalists began to doubt him, funny that, in particular journalists for the Daily Chronicle, Sydney's Evening News and the Daily Telegraph, calling him out as a hoaxer. And it was actually his deserted wife, Eliza, who identified Louis from a copy of Wide World magazine and confirmed that his stories were untrue, which embarrassed the hell out of the reputable magazine. In 1899, Louis became a musical sensation in South Africa, calling himself, yeah, you guessed it, the greatest liar on earth. And when he tried to do the same gig in Australia in 1901, well, he got booed off stage. Funny that, because, yeah, he's going up against people who actually live in Australia and saying, yeah, this is what I did. And they go, nah, I don't think so. Now, Louis de Rougemont gave up and became a handyman by the name of Louis Redman and died in London, 9th of June, 1921, survived by his second wife, Thurza, who he married as Louis de Rougemont in 1915. The Wide World magazine's motto was, "Truth is stranger than fiction," and in Louis's case wrote, and I quote, "Truth is stranger than fiction, but de Rougemont is stranger than both." Good on you, mate. No. Bad boy. Very, very bad.
Yeah, I can imagine Australians would not take tales of flying wombats, even by someone calling himself the greatest liar on earth, particularly good graces at that time.
No. I think they were a little bit more straight-laced than Australians now. I mean, as Aussies, we like to take the piss out of just about anything. But, yeah, not back then.
No.
Lewis, Henry, whatever your name was, or Henry originally, not a good show, mate.
Oh. Well, from someone who went by many different names to someone with one name, but with a rather interesting story behind it. So, I don't want to give away the surprise.
No, I'm not even going to say a word because I love this story.
Okay. Now, many educational institutions around the world regularly brag about their famous students, graduates who have gone on to shape the world, be it through business, education, or entertainment. But what if the student never existed in the first place? Why would the name remain famous? Why would a recent president of the USA, former, by the way, reference them in a speech? To find out, let's examine the history of George P. Burdell. In 1927, one William Edgar Smith was joining the student body at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, USA, commonly known as Georgia Tech, and discovered he had been sent two enrollment forms. Instead of just throwing the extra copy away, he decided to have a little fun. Originally, he intended to enroll the president of the Academy of Richmond in Augusta, that he was attending at the time, George P. Butler, but decided at the last minute to change the surname to Burdell. Both enrollments were accepted, and to make life a little simpler, William signed George up for the same classes as himself, completing coursework, assignments, and even tests twice, ensuring there was enough variation in the work to avoid lecturers and institute staff from becoming suspicious. He also got some friends in on the joke to help him out.
Combined effort.
By 1930, George graduated with a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and was even invited to join a secret Georgia Tech society known as the Anuk Society. William wasn't done with the joke, though, and went on to ensure that George received his master's in mechanical engineering a few years later. Even though this seemed to be the end of his academic career, he managed to join the Institute's basketball team, the Yellow Jackets, in 1956. George's influence started to spread further, with him being listed as serving with the English Royal Air Force as a B-17 bomber pilot in World War II, and apparently also served in the Korean War, Vietnam, and Operation Desert Storm. He's joined the directors of Mad Magazine from 1969 to 1981. He even briefly had the top spot in Time Magazine's Person of the Year online poll in 2001, until he was removed from the list, and has been listed as a production assistant on South Park.
This guy gets around.
He does. Despite the joke being well and truly outed, students often attempt to re-enroll George at Georgia Tech. Even when enrollments were computerized in 1969, a group of students got together to hack the system to ensure George still got through. His name often appears on sign-up sheets at the Institute, and he is listed as a member of most of the local churches. His birthday is celebrated at Georgia Tech every year on April 1st. You can even find him on Facebook, even though his profile picture is strangely absent. He lives on with his own Georgia Tech alumni record. He is listed as a faculty member. His office hours and contact details are strangely absent, but you can email him. And when Barack Obama spoke at Georgia Tech in 2015, he started his speech with, quote, "Now I understand George P. Burdell was supposed to introduce me today, but nobody could find him," end quote. So that's how George P. Burdell, a man who never existed, became Georgia Tech's most famous and long-lived student. So to his creator, William Edgar Smith, I thank you for giving us this wonderful bit of What the History.
Bloody brilliant. Good on you, William Edgar Smith.
And go, George.
Go, George. Wait, He joined the basketball team, though, and when they gotten suspicious when he never turned up to training or anything? Are they just going, oh, yeah?
I'm sure he's been signed up for a lot of things at Georgia Tech over the years.
Oh, God.
Not bad for someone who enrolled in the early 1900s.
Oh, he did well.
Yeah. Excellent. He did.
So he's been going there for...
almost 100 years, 90 years
he's been going around there.
Yep. Excellent.
Good on you, George.
Can't wait for the 100th anniversary of George P. Bedell.
They probably will. They'll do something exciting for him on April 1st.
They probably will.
Might even bake him a cake.
That'll be a completely different What the History, I think. if we're still going in 10 years' time.
Of course we will.
Woo! And on that note, rather daunting, really.
What, 10 years of us?
Anything lasting for 10 years.
We've lasted for over 20.
That's very true. Yay! Anyway, thank you.
Enough about us.
Thank you for listening to What the History.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming along for this little ride with us every fortnight. We do appreciate you coming along.
We love you.
We do indeed. Now, if you want to know more about what we talked about, the sources are listed down below in the podcast description.
We call them references. Us academics call them references.
I'm a rebel.
Are you?
Academic. Mm-hmm. Ish person.
Really?
Anyway. I'm more the historian. That's academic.
Yes, you are.
Whee!
Well, we do researching and reporting, so yes.
There we go. Excellent.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And you can also head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, to check out the sources/references there, or check out our previous episodes as well. You can also get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you on that homepage. You can find the What the History Facebook page, or find us at pod_what on Twitter. Or if you want to be a bit old-fashioned, you can even send us an email.
Oh, my God.
Is email old-fashioned now?
I hope not.
I don't know. It seems old-fashioned.
I send a lot of emails.
You can email us.
That sounds awful.
It does. At wthpod@rufusproject.com. We would definitely love to hear from you, and let us know what you think of the podcast. You can also, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes or your preferred podcast app of choice very, very easily too. So keep coming along for the ride. We'd love to have you join in.
We would. Woo. The more the merrier.
Indeed, indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't think we've got anything else to add, so join us.
It's not hot tonight. There you go.
We normally talk about that in the start before the thing.
Oh, I'm being a rebel.
Okay, you're being a rebel too. Oh, yeah. Well, so to bring this rebellious episode to a close, I think. So,
well,
please.
Yeah, we got two rebels.
We do.
One that was a bit nuts and one that was just plain funny.
So please join us again in a fortnight's time, and we'll have two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the History? Good night, everyone.
Farewell. I'll be unhappy, I'll let you